people who don't vote are often described as apathetic or sometimes defeatist by those who would encourage us to vote. What do you think of that point of view?
I would distinguish between people who are truly apathetic and choose not to vote because of that apathy, and those who take a principled stand and refuse to vote because they consider voting violates their moral principles. Now, that's the class that I would place myself in. You know, how many people are actually in that class is very difficult for me to gauge. I would assume that it's a small percentage of those who actually or generally don't vote.
I suspect that if that weren't the case, that there would be rioting in the streets.
Or at least the politicians would be beside themselves because they would be feeling like their sanction or their legitimacy was lost.
So what are the reasons that you do not vote? If you can kind of give us a brief rundown on the argument for principled non-voting.
At least in my own situation, I look upon the government or the state organization, the political organization, as a inherently invasive and criminal and coercive institution. So given that insight or that attitude that I have towards the government, to me the government is violating all the common standards of morality and decency. When the government collects a tax, it's saying it's threatening you if you're either pay the tax or they'll put you in jail or they'll seize your property. And that to me is stealing. And I don't want to sanction a coercive organization or the coercive actions that the government takes in order to exist.
Do you believe that our current forms of government as they are beyond the possibility of reform?
I don't believe that government can be reformed to eliminate its coercive nature. I mean, we might make it a little more palatable, or maybe it'll steal a little bit less here, or fine-tune it a little bit. But if government, as it existed historically, and as it continues to exist today, I don't believe it can be reformed to change its inherent nature. Because if government can't collect its taxes under the threat of violence, people are just going to ignore it, and we wouldn't have a government then. We would have, you know, voluntary institutions providing services that people want.
There are people who call themselves libertarians who have run for seats in legislatures on both sides of the border. Can people who reject voting on principle also participate in government?
Well, they can, but are they acting in a contradictory fashion is the main question.
Right.
And I would say yes, that they are being inconsistent and acting contrary to their professed principles. One of the things that got me interested in non-voting probably 20 years ago or more was the fact that libertarians in the United States were starting a libertarian party. And, of course, some of those libertarians wanted to reform and limit the government. But other libertarians that were supporting the libertarian party shared that insight with me that government is essentially a coercive organization. So at least my initial interest at that time was in pointing out to those who shared the common assumption with me that they were acting inconsistently and contrary to their principles, because if government is a coercive organization and they're trying to take the seats of power, what is it they're trying to, you know, to teach people? What is it they're trying to demonstrate to people? They're reinforcing the legitimacy that government needs in order to operate when they are voting and engaging in electoral politics. Now, are there non-political or non-coercive ways of changing society without resorting to politics, yes. I guess I could say any peaceful, non-governmental approach which a person might choose would fill that or satisfy that criteria. I mean, it can be anything from parents choosing to homeschool their children because they believe that they can raise their children better than they can by sending them to government schools, people engaging in private charitable work, people engaging in business activities, creating new businesses, providing jobs. I have a kind of a saying that, you know, if each person would take care of improving themselves, the end result would be a better society. And that kind of places the responsibility back where I ultimately think it belongs, on each person.
I assume that you would include protesting, for instance, or other less passive forms of activism in addition to what you've already outlined.
Yes, there's certainly a myriad of nonviolent forms of change, protest. I mean, as you say, I mean, I think we could include street protest, letter writing, certainly writing books, teaching. I mean, there's just a whole slew of things that people can engage in. I mean, certainly you're choosing to broadcast these radio interviews is a way of trying to influence people, opening them up to new ideas.
On the question of reform, I know we've already dealt with this a little bit, but one of the questions I'm asking everybody who I'm speaking to in this series is in particular, what their feelings are about a system of mandatory voting.
I think that's a good question. And, you know, I would oppose compulsion applied to voters just as I would oppose compulsion applied in any area of life. Let me back up again before I try to answer that or elaborate on that a little bit.
Okay.
It's my belief that governments require legitimacy. In other words, governments have to cloak their action in an aura of moral legitimacy in order to sustain their power. And it's almost a demonstration that governments which would choose to enact, you know, compulsory voting laws are sort of straining their limit in achieving that legitimacy because they're showing that, you know, they have to threaten people with force in order to make them go to the polls and express that support of government. So I guess I would be a civil disobedient if there was a mandatory voting law in effect, because I would consider that a violation of my personal integrity to force me to vote.
In the lead up to the upcoming elections in the United States, there is a group or a way of thinking, if not a movement, that suggests that anyone but Bush would be the preferable outcome. And this implies that people should vote as a form of protest. Now, my question is, would you ever consider voting as a form of protest?
No, I wouldn't. I'd like to read you a little quote from H.L. Mencken, if I may, which I think, you know, first of all, my initial reaction is the lesser of two evils is still evil. That's number one.
Right.
And Mencken wrote once that history has proved that the primary error lies in making the false assumption that some politicians are better than others. Politics mainly consists in the hopeful delusion that a change in form is a change in substance. And, you know, I might add that the government or the state remains a criminal gang regardless of which group of politicians are in charge. Kind of a, you know, maybe a hard-nosed statement, but that's my attitude and that's my opinion.
You wrote something interesting about voting as an act of violence. How can voting be interpreted as an act of violence?
My article, Is Voting an Act of Violence? is in the April 2000 issue of my newsletter called The Voluntarist. And there's a, anybody can do a search on The Voluntarist, and we have actually two websites, but they can go to voluntarist.com, and I believe that article is posted on the website there. But essentially, in that article, I tried to examine that question, and I came to the conclusion that, yes, voting is an act of violence. Now, let me try to just briefly outline the supporting evidence or the reasons why I came to that conclusion. First of all, going back to the idea of how government is organized, we need to recognize that government is the only organization in our society that regularly and legitimately obtains its money from compulsory levies, what we call taxation, and the government outlaws competition in providing police services and many other protective services. Now, when a voter goes in the voting booth and either votes electronically or writes in a name on a paper ballot or pulls a voting lever down, that act in itself is not coercive, is not violent. But when we look at the chain of responsibility, when we look at the organization of the political system, we have to recognize that there is a link between the act of voting, obviously the election and selection of people to hold the governmental office, and the fact that those in governmental office then pass laws and statutes, use the army and the police to enforce the political statutes. Now, my argument is that just as the Nuremberg judgments after World War II held the leaders of the Axis forces liable and held people who claimed that they were just, you know, quote, obeying orders liable for their actions during World War II, that the voters, people who vote, have a liability because they are, one, participating in the system. You might say that they're aiding and abetting the system, that they're acting as accessories to government compulsion, to the crimes that governments commit. So, in effect, what I'm saying is that voting, while it's not a direct act of violence, that it is a presumptive act of violence, because each voter assumes the right to appoint a political guardian over other human beings. Each person, by voting, sanctions the violence used by agents of the state.
I know already that you feel that nonviolence is preferable to an armed conflict in terms of bringing about change. The question is, why do you feel that way? There's an expression called diversity, respecting diversity of tactics, which tends to respect individual choices on these questions of violence. But you're very committed, if I understand what I've read, to nonviolence.
Well, that's correct. That's both for moral and practical reasons. One, at least in the situation in which we find ourselves today, the government holds most of the guns, and it would be very difficult to, from just a practical standpoint, to accomplish anything, you know, fighting violence with violence. The other more important issue for me is the moral issue. One, my objection is to the use, the initiation of violence and compulsion by the government, and to embrace the same means that the government is using would be a violation of my conscience and a violation of, you know, the principles that I believe are important. The other or another aspect of looking at that question is, you know, if somehow the government were completely overthrown, and let's just say that some group was able to successfully overthrow the government by use of force, there still would exist what I call a slave mentality, an attitude among people that government is legitimate and that we require a government to direct our lives and to control society. And, you know, that's totally contrary to my own personal outlook. Even if libertarians or whomever took over the government and thought that they were going to change things, if you cannot convince the vast majority of people that we don't need the kind of government that we have now, it's, you know, such a violent revolution would be futile anyhow, because in just a matter of short course, things would return. They might be a little bit different, but as Mencken said, we wouldn't have changed anything in substance. You have to change the way people look at society, look at themselves, look at government, and accept personal responsibility in order to have a really systemic revolution. I was going to say education is an important part of that.
I was going to say, and not only that, but it's inherently nonviolent.
That's right. Well, that's right, exactly. That's convincing one mind at a time, you might say. And that's the only way society will be permanently and positively changed.